I don't react, but fuck. It's bad. Really bad. I look up at her. Metal or glass?
Both,
she says. I press my lips to her belly, and she trembles again under my kiss. And holy hell, my mind flashes to war scenes I've lived, to images of shrapnel and bodies that killed innocent people I couldn't save. She could have died from this. I can't believe she didn't.
It's okay, Asher,
she says when I don't immediately react.
I know it's ugly and...
No, I say. It's not ugly. I kiss her belly again and stand up, my hands settling on her shoulders. I've seen people with metal in their bodies, and it's too easy for me to imagine metal and glass in your body. It's not something you want to know someone you care about experienced. I stroke hair from her face. But sweetheart, you're beautiful. Stunning. That scar does nothing to detract from that. In fact, it just reminds me what a survivor you are.
I can't have kids. It damaged me. I can't ever have kids.
Then... I don't have to use a condom, right?
Asher, please, this is a big deal to me.
I don't want kids. I've seen too many people die, kids die. I can't have one of my own that could die. If you want kids...
Don't say adopt. I've heard that. I don't want to hear that, and I don't want to adopt. I don't want kids.
She doesn't have to say more. The bastard husband wanted kids and made her pay when she couldn't have them. He probably mocked her scar. He probably did a lot of things I don't want to think about until I stand in front of him, and I will. This is us. We decide what matters for us, yes?
Yes,
she says. So, I say, trying to shift the mood. No condom, right? She rewards me with that soft, sweet laugh of hers.
No, you don't have to use a condom.
Then it's official, I say. You're the perfect woman. She surprises me then and leans into me, pushing to her toes and pressing her lips to mine, her hand on my cheek. And for a moment, I let her mouth linger against mine, just enjoying the first time that she's actually kissed me. But I am too hungry and hot for her to last long. My mouth slants over hers, my tongue licking into her mouth at the exact moment the doorbell rings. Holy fuck, I murmur against her lips. I feel like I'm never going to actually get you naked.
You do know we only just met, right?
She teases.
It's not been long.
It feels like a lifetime of me wanting inside you, sweetheart. And since I only have a few people on my approved list, this is a walker keeping me from being there. I kiss her. Fix your clothes. You're for me, not them. I grab my shirt.
Did you miss your meeting?
She asks, attending to her zipper, which she pulls up while I really just want to pull it back down. I pull on my shirt and glance at my watch. I have an hour and a half before I have to be at the office.
Should I go someplace?
She asks.
Another room, or...
You stay right here with me. That works just fine. I kiss her and head to the door, zipping up my pants on the way. The bell rings again, and I open the door. Hold your fucking horses, I say, as I bring my father in his $6,000 blue pinstriped suit into view. Hello, son. You're not on my approved list. I bought the building. I'm on everyone's approved list. Of course you did, I say, considering he's always trying to own me. What do you want?
invite me in. Not really feeling that kind of love right now. Invite me in, son. I open the door wider and leave him there, walking back toward the kitchen. Sierra's behind the island, and she mouths,
Your father?
Unfortunately, yes, I say, rounding the island to stand next to her.
Should I go somewhere?
She asks again. Stay with me, I say again as well, right as my father appears at the other side of the island. I look at him now the way Sierra might see him. A 55-year-old version of me when I had no tats and my hair was short. I hate that image. I hate anything that reminds me that this man and I are blood.
I see we have company,
he says, eyeing Sierra.
And you would be?
With him,
she replies, repeating what I told her, which is not only a smart response considering her circumstances, but an amusing one. No one talks around my father but me, and now Sierra. He intimidates the damn wind, but not her. But then she has practice with men like him. Her ex, I realize now, is someone quite like my father. And I'm his fucking son, who many think is a flip of a switch from becoming his father. Or to Sierra, a clone of the man who is trying to kill her. Chapter 15. Asher. I look at my father, who is looking at Sierra, and I don't like it. Why are you here? I demand. He cuts his gaze to me.
Right to business, he says. A chip off the old block. The company is doing a Wounded Warrior Project black tie fundraiser just before Thanksgiving. We've sent you 2 invitations and left you 4 messages. It would be appropriate, as my son and a veteran, as well as a distinguished SEAL, to attend.
Distinguished, I say. Now I'm a distinguished SEAL? Is that what you're feeding the stockholders when you explain why I'm not working for you?
They're impressed, as they should be.
I laugh without humor. Should we tell them that you disinherited me for becoming a distinguished SEAL?
Is that what you want? The money? I'll write you a damn check if you'll put an end to this silliness. Take your seat at the table where you belong.
Yes, I say. Please write the check, then I'll show up at the event where I'll rewrite the check to the Wounded Warrior Project charity. Then all will be well in my world. He reaches into his pocket and sets the invitation on the counter.
Be there.
It would look like shit to your fellow servicemen if a distinguished SEAL couldn't spare a few hours on their behalf. And bring your plus one, if you can afford to buy her a dress. She's a hell of a lot prettier than you these days. He turns to leave and Sierra calls out.
Because what woman could afford to buy her own dress, right?
And there it is. Every nerve my father can hit for Sierra, which her ex must have hit too, already surfacing. I know my father, and I know exactly what comes next. Words are weapons, he used to tell me. They can be used against you. Speak less and listen more. And that piece of advice is what he uses against Sierra now. He stops and turns to look at her, giving her an amused, arrogant look before he simply says nothing and leaves. Translation. You poor, pathetic little girl are simply beneath a reply. I don't pursue him. I don't look at Sierra, not yet. I stand there, hands pressed to the counter, and listen to his footsteps, waiting for the door to shut. The minute it does, I push off the counter and walk across the room and lock the door. Fucker.
He's smart enough to assume Sierra matters to me, or she wouldn't be here. He was jockeying for a way to use her against me, and he did. He messed with her head. I cross the room, and Sierra is now at the end cap of the island, waiting on me, leaning on the counter. She watches my every step, her expression unreadable. I stop in front of her, and before I can speak, she says,
"I'm sorry."
"Why would you be sorry? He's the ass."
"I know what just happened,"
she says.
"He used me against me, and me against you. I can see it now, but I still let it happen."
"That's not on you, Sierra."
"Yes, it is. Because Dev, the beast, that's what I call him in my head, my ex, my fucking husband I can't get rid of, is just like your father. And I know so well how he watched me from the moment he got here and looked for a trigger. And I let it happen."
She almost said his name. "Dev. That has to stand for Devlin or Devin or hell, maybe the devil. But right now, he isn't the issue. Right now, I need her to see me, not my father. Not the beast, as she apparently calls him." I pull her to me, my hands sliding under her hair. "I'm not him. I'm not my father."
"I know that."
"You can't know that, Sierra. You don't know me well enough to know that, but you will. I promise you, you will." I close my mouth over hers, tongue stroking hers, and there is no resistance in her. She gives a soft little moan and melts into me, her soft curves pressed against me, ensuring I'm hard all over. And holy hell, I could get lost in her. I could forget everything I hate about my father right now, and I want to, but I don't let that happen. I don't make her an escape fuck, not Sierra. Not the first time. "We don't have time to do this right, and I want to do it right," I say, tearing my mouth from hers.
"We both have anger issues right now we need to deal with,"
she says.
"And you said we needed to just fuck and get past it. So let's just fuck and forget, and then..."
I don't need to be told twice. I kiss her, and this time when my hands slide up her shirt, I don't stop. And she doesn't stop me. I pull it up and over her head and follow with mine again. Her hands are on my chest before I finish tossing it away.
"I really do like your ink,"
she says, her hands traveling down my arms. "Show me," I say, removing a money clip just below her bra and tossing it aside.
"I will,"
she promises, as I reach up and unclip the front clasp of her bra. I part the silk cups, and my gaze lowers to her high breasts and tight little pink nipples. Her body is perfect. Everything about her is perfect. My eyes lift to hers and caress the straps from her shoulder, and then flatten my hand between her shoulder blades and mold her naked breasts to my naked chest. "Show me now."
"I will,"
she says, her voice a raspy, sexy, desire-laden turn-on that makes me want to kiss her and fuck, even more than I wanted to kiss her and fuck her before. I kiss her again, drinking in the taste of her, all sweet honey and passion, my lips to her lips, my tongue to her tongue, my hand on her backside.
"Asher, I need..."
"I need," I say, scooping her up, and her legs wrap my hips, which is exactly where I want them, where I want her, next to me, pressed to me, riding me. She clings to my shoulders, and I carry her into the living room on the opposite side of the stairwell, a room hugged by red brick with high arched, deep windows that don't quite reach the floor or ceiling. I set her down on the thick pile of the brown rug in front of a leather couch.
Her hands caress over my arms, tracing the colorful designs in my ink, one of her palms flattening on my stomach, just above my jeans, fingers slipping into the very top of my waistband, then down over my zipper. I inhale as she strokes the thick ridge of my erection through my pants, the image of her soft little hand wrapping on my cock, a perfect fantasy she will no doubt make real. And yet I want something indefinably more with this woman. I slip my hand under her hair and pull her to me. More, I say, voicing that thought, my free hand unzipping her pants. Give me more. I kiss her, a fast, deep, passionate kiss that ends with me setting her away from me. Undress, I say, planning to do the same. I sit down on the couch, and she sits down on the ottoman just behind her. She takes off her shoes. I remove my ankle holster and show it to her. The hidden weapon.
And I didn't even have to look for it,
she says. Next time, I say, setting it on the couch and pulling off my boots. I stand then, digging my phone from my pocket and tossing it on the couch. She's still sitting, watching me, and I let her. I'll go first again, I say, and she doesn't argue. She just watches me with big blue eyes while I watch her, looking for any signs she feels she's in over her head or moving too fast, but I find none. I strip my jeans and my underwear away in a fast, swift move, my hands out to my sides, my cock hard between us. I'm all yours, Sierra. She doesn't look away. She's bold with her inspection, her gaze traveling my body before reaching my eyes.
Am I allowed to say you're beautiful? Or is there some other word I'm supposed to say?
For a guy, you get naked and you show him with your hands and your mouth. She laughs, just like I hoped.
The things you say.
I say it how I see it. And I'm not seeing it. Not all of it. I step to her and take her hand, pulling her to her feet. Come on, sweetheart. I want time we don't have, and I need those pants of yours off. She reaches for her pants, and I consider sitting down, watching her like she watched me. And I would any other time, but not when I am aware of anything that might make her feel she's performing for me, aware that the beast demanded much of her. Threatened her, controlled her, and I have zero doubt that extended to sex. No. The time for me to sit and watch Sierra is not now. It's when she makes that decision, or gives me some signal that she's ready for more, and she's not now. Not this first time, not until she really does trust me. She slips her pants and panties down her long legs, and then off. And I'm left with creamy white skin and perfect curves. I mold her to me. My cock at her hip, one of her breasts in my hand, my fingers tweaking her nipple. I'm rewarded with her arched back and a tiny, sexy pant. I'm going to make him hurt the way he made you afraid. Her hands grip my arms.
You can't?
I can, I say. And one day you'll understand that the good guys aren't less brutal or deadly than the bad guys. We're still killers. We're just the killers who do it for the right side of the law. Maybe that will give you peace. Maybe that will make you hate me, too. But I can't change it. And neither can he. I don't give her a chance to reply. And I don't let myself think about how ultimately a killer to her might really be the enemy no matter what. Because I have killed. Because I'll kill again. And so, I kiss her again, long and deep, And then I sit down, pulling her between my legs, looking up at her, searching her face, and looking for the answer to what it is I feel with her, why I feel anything but lust, when lust is all I ever feel. Looking for the answer to the question I just kissed her to avoid asking. While I fall for her, and she gets to know the killer in me, will she hate me? She reaches down and cups my cheek. I lean into the touch, and then take her hand and kiss her palm. I release it, and my attention goes to her scar again. And I trace the deep and brutal edges of it before glancing up at her again. I can't tell you that the scar is sexy, Sierra, because nothing that hurt you is ever going to be sexy to me. But you are so fucking sexy. I press my lips to her belly and caress my hand over her hip and then down between her legs until my finger teases her clit. She gasps and arches into me, and I press into the wet heat of her sex, and while I want to just think about how wet and hot she is, I notice that she's shaved, and I can't help but wonder if she's hiding her real hair color. I don't even want to think why she fears anyone would get that close. She grabs my shoulders, and just when I would slip two fingers inside her, she pants out.
We have no time. Remember? We're supposed to just fuck and...
I pull her into my lap, straddling me, my erection between us. And I am hit with how much it must have taken for her to trust me, to be here like this with me right now. 9 months of trusting no one, years of what he did to her. I won't ever hurt you.
I know that, she says. And don't tell me I don't, I do. I see who you are. I feel who you are. And I just know.
She doesn't, but that's okay. She wants to believe she does, but I want her to know it. I want what she knows to be real, and that's a contradiction to how much I need her to know that I'm the killer that can kill him. Those things fall to the side now, though. Now I just want inside her. Now I just want to fuck her. I drag her mouth to mine and lift her, pressing my cock inside of her. She grabs my shoulders and does this slow, driving me wild slide down my cock until I'm buried inside her. All her wet, tight heat clamping down on me.
And now we did it,
she whispers.
We're past it.
No, I say, pulling her down while thrusting into her. Now we're just getting started. She pants out of breath, her lashes fluttering, and I want to kiss her, but I want to watch even more. Ride me, sweetheart, I say. Show me you know I'm here. She laughs.
Like I could not know that fact right now, Asher.
I'm not sure you do, I say, thrusting into her, making sure she damn well does know. She leans into me and holds onto my shoulders, and we start this slow bump and grind that I could savor for a long damn time. But we really don't have time. I pull her mouth to mine, and the minute our tongues touch, we snap. We start a frenzied thrust and ride, and I wrap my arm around her waist, dragging her down against me, pumping into her until she stiffens on the edge of release and tries to bury her head in my neck. No, I say, pulling her forehead to mine. Stay right here with me. I pause, and remembering my promise, I add, Sierra.
Asher.
She pants out in a raspy laugh before sucking in a breath as she starts trembling and quaking, her sex clenching around my cock. And oh yeah, that's just what I need. I am there with her, holding onto her and pulling her down on top of me one last time as I thrust into release.
We go up together and we come down together. And I know the moment we're present, outside those moments of intense pleasure, again our foreheads still melded together.
Now we did it,
she says, and we both laugh. Yes, I say, now we did it. She cups my face and leans back to look at me.
Any regrets?
Regrets? Sweetheart, I'm ready to go again. Okay, well, in a few minutes. She laughs, and my phone rings on the couch where I'd set it. I groan and reach for it. At least they waited until afterward. She tries to get up, and I hold on to her. I'll carry you to the bathroom, I say.
But your call.
I answer the line. Yeah, Blake, I say, standing up with Sierra in my arms, me still inside her, as I walk toward the downstairs bathroom under the stairs. I pulled Kyle off the job, he says. Why? I ask, settling Sierra on the stone countertop in the spare bathroom and flipping on the light before handing her a hand towel. Just get to the office. He hangs up and I set the phone down next to Sierra. I need to get to the office.
I cannot believe you were talking to whoever that was while inside me.
I like being inside you, I say. But I pull out of her and she presses the towel between her legs. We need to go, though, I add. Hurry and dress. My bedroom and bathroom are at the top of the stairs. I set her on the floor.
We need to go?
I told you. I want you to get to know my inner circle, and so yes, we need to go.
Asher, I don't know about this.
Do you trust Luke?
I have a good feeling about Luke, yes.
You'll feel the same about the rest of the team. Scout's honor. Okay, SEAL's honor. I was never a fucking scout. That uniform was ridiculous. I kiss her. Hurry up. I exit the bathroom and walk back into the living room, pulling on my pants. Sierra joins me and picks up her clothes.
I'm going to grab my bags and go dress upstairs.
I nod, and she hurries away. I'm pulling on my shirt when I hear her walking up the stairs. Normally, I would follow her to my bedroom, but my mind is on Blake's odd behavior and his secrecy over pulling Kyle off the job. There's more of a problem going on here than the anniversary of Whitney's murder. And problems with the Walker clan are dangerous.
Chapter 16. Sierra. For the first time in what feels like years, I can't feel the nightmare of Devin's hands on my body. I feel Asher's. I feel a sense of freedom from the beast that I didn't believe possible, and I have Asher to thank for that. But at what price to Asher? I don't let myself think about the implications of that question for too long. Not now when I'm naked and charging up a set of stairs with bags in my hands. Not even when I reach his bedroom, which smells all earthy and spicy like him. And now me. I can smell him on my skin. Not even when I rush across the brown wooden floor with a sanded finish to pass his massive bed framed by a brown leather headboard, a bed I will sleep in with him tonight. I hold my thoughts at bay until I'm standing inside his bathroom, fully dressed, with my new used lace-up boots on, my money belt back around my waist, and my wild mess of hair brushed. A mess created by Asher's fingers. Hair brushed with his brush that I found in a drawer of the dark brown cabinets beneath his double sinks. That's how entwined my life has become with his in a blink of an eye. I'm sharing his brush, which is somehow far more intimate than just fucking. Because what just happened downstairs, which was supposed to be just fucking, wasn't just fucking at all. My hand goes to my belly, to the scars there that run far deeper than the surface. Asher knew that. He understood, but he doesn't know why, even if he suspects. That accident, the way the scars messed with my head afterward, those things weakened me for long enough to empower Devon, every nasty part of him, of which there are many. I shove aside that thought and push off the counter, snatching my new, also used, black leather purse from the thrift store bag that I've set next to the dark wood-edged, egg-shaped tub. I study the purse, as I did in the store, almost certain it's a real Chanel, which is a real treat for a girl with a bar-tip trust fund and nothing more. I slip it over my head and chest and let the small bag rest at my hip, despite it being ridiculously empty. I have no makeup with me. I have no key, but it serves a purpose. I lift my shirt up and unzip the money pouch, removing a 20 and sticking it in the side pocket of the purse for easy access, and then take some cash and stick it in my boot. I straighten, and I'm suddenly aware of Asher standing in the archway of the door.
"You carry the cash with you because you're afraid you'll have to run," he says.
"Yes," I say, one part of my brain thinking about those colorful inked arms of his holding me, while the other thinks about Texas and the stupid moves I'd made there that cost me thousands of dollars. I carry a purse so that anyone who tries to steal from me thinks they got everything I have.
All smart decisions most people wouldn't think about. I'd never leave cash in that shithole of an apartment, regardless of the lock I installed. But you're here now. Keep a couple $100 with you. No more until I can make other arrangements for you.
I'd ask what arrangements he means, but he's already continued with his thought.
You can leave the rest in my safe.
He pushes off the archway and motions me to the closet, leading the way inside, where he flips on the light. I join him in a large walk-in with a bench in the center and built-in wooden cabinets. He stops in front of one of them, a row of suits beside him that I don't expect, but I should. I've met his father. I know he went to Harvard. Asher opens the cabinet and displays a safe, turning the lock's circular combination.
50-11-33,
he says, opening the door to display a wooden box with a gun sitting on top. I remove $200 from my money belt and then stick the belt in the safe and the cash in my boot.
"If you get into trouble," Asher says, "you call me. If you can't call me, meet me at the Hard Rock in Times Square. Sit in the bar. Wait for me, and don't take public transportation of any kind to get there. That's where they'll look for you. Walk there."
"Why the Hard Rock?"
"It's busy, with multiple levels, and not where anyone would expect you to go. They expect you to be on the move, and when you're on the move, you might find them and miss me. Stay put. Be the needle in a haystack, and New York City is one hell of a haystack."
"That haystack is exactly why I came here, despite the high cost of living."
"It's expensive, but still a good decision."
He taps the box in the safe.
"My emergency funds, ammo, and travel documents. If at any time you think you need to leave, take the cash and the gun, and leave my documents in case I need them to help you. I'll get you documents for your fake name, and I'll teach you to shoot."
"You can get me documents?"
"Yes, I can, and I will. And one of the reasons I want you to come with me today is to see Blake. He's a world-class hacker. My father is going to look into you. He'll ask for the name at the security desk, and since he bought the building, he'll get it. I want him and anyone else looking to find you, the Kelly version of you, and Blake can make that happen."
"Thank you, Asher. I hope I don't ever need the emergency resources, but there is more comfort than I can express in knowing that I have them."
"The only way to ensure that never happens is to destroy him before he comes for you."
He shuts the safe.
"And when you trust me enough to give me his name, I will."
"Know your friends and your enemies," I say. "That's a lesson I learned the hard way in Texas when I called someone I thought could be trusted. Someone in law enforcement, Asher. High up and well-respected. I knew him for over a year. I've given you my trust in a blink of an eye. To ask me to trust your inner circle as fast is a wall I just can't climb at the same speed." He studies me for several beats, his expression unreadable, but obviously tense.
"Let's go."
He doesn't touch me. In fact, he steps around me and starts walking. He's angry, and I get it. I have secrets. He's protecting me despite those secrets, and I don't know what to do. I've already gone so far out of my comfort zone with Asher. But then, he is doing all of these things for me without any demand for anything in return, even my secrets. I follow him, and by the time I catch up, he's already halfway down the stairs. I rush down them and he's on the phone at the door when I reach the living room.
20 more minutes,
Asher says, glancing at his watch.
It's only 7.
He unlocks the front door, but doesn't open it.
I'll have an hour when I get there. Yes, Blake.
He turns to face me as I join him.
I'm aware you're in a pissy mood, and since that hasn't happened since you've been with Kara, we obviously need to talk.
He ends the call and slips his phone back into his pocket.
The code is 2379,
he says as he opens the door and we step into the hallway.
You don't need a key. I'll install the app on your phone tomorrow.
You're angry.
No, Sierra, I'm not angry. I'm just thinking.
But you're feeling that regret now, aren't you? I ask, deciding that is worse than his anger.
I'm just thinking, Sierra.
He repeats. About what?
Know your friends and enemies. That's a profound and accurate statement. I understand what happened in Texas. I get it. You were betrayed by someone that resembles the people in my circles. But if you judge me and my people by him and his people, we're over before we started, and we're also all going to end up dead.
He steps to me.
Think outside your box.
I have. That's why I tried to walk away from you.
If that's what you want, Sierra, I'll let you go. But it's not what I want, and someone alone is not better. It's just alone.
He turns to open the door. I catch his arm.
I'm about to take you to the Walker offices. I'm about to invite you into their safe zone. And I'm about to ask my boss, who despite his asshole mood is a good man, to give you the documentation you need to leave the country, while I've given you access to the cash. I'm doing this despite the fact that when you're the kind of good guys we are, we make a lot of nasty enemies that could use someone like you to attack us. And I'm doing it because you, despite all logic and time, already matter to me. Because I choose to trust you, even if that makes me a fool. But I cannot allow that to hurt my friends who are my family.
I press my fingers to my temples. I don't know what to do, Asher. I see your point of view. I see it clearly, but if you really see mine, you know why I can't just blindly trust anyone, and yet I have you. Don't ask for the documents yet. Wait until you trust me, and I'll wait to ask for that kind of help when you trust me.
You didn't ask. That's the thing, Sierra. I'm not holding my help ransom.
I don't know what to do, Asher. We're trying to get some place together that defies time, but requires it. Either let me go, at least for now, or don't involve them. Actually, I need to go. He steps to me, his hand at my hip.
Is that what you want? Do you want me to let you go?
No, I think. But I know that's me being selfish, so I say, yes. His hand falls away, and he takes a step back as if I've slapped him or hurt him. I don't expect his reaction. I don't expect the moment he turns around and presses his hands on the door, his head lowering, as if grappling with what to do next. Nor do I expect to feel the loss of his touch, or the promise of losing so much more by losing him. I can't leave him and us like this. I move toward him and slide between him and the door, pressing my hand to his chest. Not because I don't want you. Not because I don't want to see what this is between us. Because this is the only way I can keep you and them safe. His hand slides under my hair and cups my neck, and he drags me close.
That's not a good answer. I don't wake up any day of my life expecting to be safe, and neither do they. We expect to make a difference. And let me be clear, you can choose not to be in my bed, but I won't let you end up dead.
You know that I want to be in your bed, Asher.
I'll give you time, Sierra. But remember this. Every minute I give you is a minute I give your beast.
Chapter 17. Sierra. Every minute I give you is a minute I give your beast. Asher says those words and then kisses me. One of those curl my toes, feel his tongue all over my body kind of kisses I'm coming to expect from Asher. When it's over, he takes my hand and leads me to the hallway, and once he's keyed in his door code that he has me repeat, we head to the elevator. We don't speak on the ride down, because there are two things in the air, that kiss and his words. No, not his words. The beast. He's the threat that both divides us and pulls us together. Once we're in the lobby, Asher links the fingers of one of our hands and leads me to the shop just inside the exit.
Fill your purse with things women fill their purses with. That way, if anyone grabs it, it won't raise questions. Put what you need on my account and get what you need for the morning. They'll send it to the room. But hurry, I need to get to the office.
He kisses me.
I need to call Luke about tonight. I'll be just outside the door.
I start to walk away, but I'm aware of him telling me who he's calling and why. I'm aware of him trying to earn my trust, and I turn around and kiss him. Thank you.
For what?
Everything, I say. Now I turn away from him and walk into the store. I grab random items and I make it fast. I charge Asher's account because it's faster and easier, but I keep the receipt. Asher meets me at the door, obviously done with his call. Hand in hand, we head outside into the dark, and judging from the thunder, a potentially stormy night. Asher guides me right, and we head down the sidewalk.
Walker Security is 3 blocks down.
He tells me.
The brothers don't just own the building and the garage I mentioned. They live there. I'm telling you this for a reason. There is always someone present in their location who is as deadly as anyone chasing you. I'm going to make sure you have about 10 numbers in your phone you can call.
I don't argue. I've claimed to be smart. I'm going to back it up with actions, and having a resource of people to help me is smart. But I've also been taught by way of my near capture in Texas that you never assume that association, job title, or even brief encounters means someone is honorable or safe. I'll pick whose number I'm willing to use, and do so cautiously. We reach the Walker Building, which is a white stone structure that is high and narrow, like so many in the city. Asher uses a security code and a key to open the door. We enter the business office to find the lobby, which has several mahogany desks and a waiting area with leather chairs vacant.
My meeting is in the conference room,
Asher says.
I'll come get you to meet them when we're done.
He glances at his watch.
We need to be at the bar in an hour.
I'm fine waiting. I want to freshen up anyway. Where's the bathroom?
I'll show you,
he says, leading me down a hallway. We stop at a doorway, and he motions to an open door.
I'll be there if you need me.
He kisses me. He's always kissing me, and I like it, and then heads toward his room. I open the bathroom door and flip on the light to find a simple single-stall bathroom with a sink and mirror and a fancy marbled countertop. There is also a fancy soap dispenser on one side of the sink and a small vase of flowers on the other. I smile with the certainty that there's been a female intervention in an all-male environment. Not that men can't be in touch with their feminine sides, but I've met Asher and Luke so far and talked to Blake. None of them strike me as the types that would do flowers and fancy soaps. I start to shut the door, but I'm just fixing my makeup, and the idea of being in a strange place and not knowing what is sneaking up on me stirs the claustrophobic sensation I've battled since the car accident, or maybe since the beast entered my life. I'm pretty sure it started then, and the accident drove it to full realization. I leave the door open and walk to the sink, applying a rose-colored lipstick, when I hear footsteps pass the door, as if there are people joining the meeting. A minute later, Asher's voice lifts in the air.
Why did you pull Kyle off the job? What aren't you telling me, Blake?
I suck in a breath with the realization that I can hear their conversation.
I have intel that Alvarez might be alive.
A male voice that I recognize as Blake's replies. Our worst fear when his body wasn't discovered, a female says.
I was there, Kara,
Asher says.
Your sister pushed him out of a chopper. He couldn't have survived that. Unless he did,
Blake says.
No,
Asher says.
That can't be true, I'm telling you. No one could survive that. You're both letting your fears that he'll come for Myla again affect you. What does Kyle say about this? I sent Kyle and Myla to Rome on the pretense of doing a job for Caden Wilkins.
Asher grimaces.
Pretense? Does that mean you misled him? Did you even tell Kyle what's going on?
Blake's jaw sets hard.
Not yet. You're fucking kidding me.
Asher snaps.
Myla's his wife.
And my sister. Kara chimes in.
And,
Asher says,
the woman Alvarez picked out of a harem of kidnapped women to make his own. She was brutalized by that man. She and Kyle have a right to know.
He's right. I think, leaning on the wall, though of course I don't completely understand what is going on, but if Myla was kidnapped by this man, She needs to know she's at risk.
We don't want to create panic, Blake says, and Caden Wilkins is not only a friend to Walker Security, he's the equivalent to the Mafia in Italy and Rome, if the Mafia had a good version. He's the balance keeper there, and he's far more powerful than Alvarez and his cartel have ever been. They're staying with him and his wife Ella, and Caden knows he's protecting them.
This is Kara's sister. How can she leave her in the dark like this?
This is your sister,
Asher says to Kara, following my thoughts exactly.
This is okay with you?
Mila went through hell, she says, her tone high, defensive. If this is fake news, I don't want her traumatized. We need to know for sure. And she's using this time to push her clothing line in Europe. She's excited.
Right now, Blake says. We have a serial killer to catch and a schedule to keep. Let's talk about Juju.
I straighten. Serial killer? Juju is a serial killer?
With the time in mind and 5 dead girls to think about, Asher says, we'll talk about Juju now. But tomorrow, we're talking about Kyle, Mila, and Alvarez.
I suck in a breath. 5 dead girls? There are 5 dead girls? That is all I need to hear. I don't think about my next move, I just make it. I exit the bathroom and walk down the hall and into the conference room. Asher is standing on the side of a long mahogany conference table. A tall, dark, and good-looking man who resembles Luke, and is obviously Blake, since he's the only other man in the room, is standing directly across from him. Kara, a pretty petite brunette, is standing next to Blake.
Sierra?
Asher says, a question in his tone. I can help, I say. Focus on him for now. I want to help.
I don't want you involved in this, he says. I don't even want you at that bar.
I'm here, I say, stepping to the end of the table, and I know what this is now, and I can't not help.
Are you law enforcement?
Blake asks.
I don't want you involved in this, Sierra.
Asher repeats, his tone sharper now. I'm already involved, I say. I know, and I'm not going to freak out or blink at the bar. I understand killers. I've had to survive living with one and working with one. Juju doesn't scare me.
If you mean some crazy ex, that doesn't make you qualified to help, Blake says. So I repeat, are you law enforcement?
No, I say, but I've worked with one of the most sought-after forensic psychologists in the country, and I've actually investigated several serial killers and a great number of murders that wouldn't be classified as serial murders with him. And I've interviewed the Son of Sam and the DC Sniper, as well as studied every serial killer that has ever been documented.
We're all good at catching killers, Blake snaps.
If good was good enough, then the FBI wouldn't call in people who were experts. They wouldn't need Sheriff Rogers, just to name one expert, who isn't even FBI but travels the country to consult with the FBI.
And you think you're one of those experts?
He asks. No, I say. I'm not one of them because I've come to know that those people have a little Dexter in them that I do not. They're people who understand a killer's tendencies a little too well to turn your back on them, even if you think they're heroes like you all are. But I know this because I've been around my share of Dexter-like people, and maybe, just maybe, if not now, one day that makes me as good as them.
Sierra,
Asher says tightly.
Are you saying that your ex is...
I'm saying that I can help. I reply quickly, cutting him off. We're talking about Juju. Yes, Kara says. And if you can help, I say help, but you need to know that there are not only 5 victims. They all look like us, Sierra. Brown hair and varied eye colors. All the same age range and build. All single. None of them were in active relationships. And his mother, who died when she was right about our age, looked like them. And us. I glance at Asher. Now I know why you were so touchy-feely with me in front of him. Thank you.
That was all my pleasure,
he assures me.
I really don't want you involved in this.
How does he kill them? I ask.
He taints the drugs he gives to the victims, Asher says. But thus far, law enforcement can't tie the drug sales to Juju. They can't call him a killer, let alone a serial killer. And the deaths by drugs isn't reading serial killer to the FBI.
Proof law enforcement likes to repeat mistakes, I say. There's a case history on just this type of killer. Charles Cullen. He was a nurse. He killed at least 40 patients. He overdosed them or contaminated their medications. There were signs that he was a killer. There were opportunities to stop him that were ignored by the medical facilities to avoid liability. They fired him. They didn't report him, and that happened more than once. But there was another killer that used drugs as well. Harold Shipman, Kara says.
The killer drug doctor,
Blake adds.
We're both ex-ATF, so we know how drugs are used as a weapon, and we both know those people who use them as such.
Which is why this client came to us, Kara says.
I've killed killers no one else could kill,
Asher says, looking at me, a point in that statement.
That's why I'm involved, and I'm a fast study. Who was Harold Shipman?
He was technically not a doctor, I say, but a general practitioner who ran a private practice. He killed 15 of his patients with drugs. He won awards in his field and was highly regarded in his community. There were no signs that he was a killer except for dead bodies that his practice justified as natural or medical causes. In both of those cases, neither left notes or taunted the police like Son of Sam or even the DC sniper, though I'm of the opinion he was trying to cover up killing his ex-wife, the way the Beast would cover up killing me. Those kinds of killers, the ones that taunt people and brag, resemble the drug cartel killers we know, Kara says. They kill and brag about it. I find the ones that don't brag, that just kill to revel in it privately, far more terrorizing. Agreed, I say. And Juju most resembles these types of killers, and most certainly Cullen and Shipman. He's got a drug connection as they did, and drugs are his weapon. It's not quite the perfect crime with the perfect cover, as it was for Cullen and Harold, because they chose legal professions, but they could have inspired him. Which means he'll be hard to catch, Kara says. But we wouldn't be involved if this was easy. Maybe I'm thinking about this wrong, I say, thrumming my fingers on the table. Maybe he's not like Cullen and Shipman. Maybe he's using the illegal drug trade as a taunt. He can do whatever he wants, and we still can't catch him.
That's a good point, Blake says. He's breaking the law right in front of our faces and still getting away with killing, too.
If that's the case, I say, then he'll keep pushing, trying to get noticed until he can't push any more. Then he'll go underground. Can I see his file?
We have a time issue here,
Asher says, tapping his watch.
We need to continue this later.
If you want my help, I need the file, I say. I've studied enough killers to look at their history that ties to their actions when they killed. Maybe I can find something you haven't that will let you catch him before he kills again. Blake, Asher, and Kara share looks before Blake nods his head.
Asher will give you what you need. And in exchange for her help, Asher says, we need you to create a digital identity now, tonight, for Kelly Vincent. My father showed up tonight and took an interest in her. He'll look her up, and soon. I need her to clear his review and anyone else who looks. Done,
Blake says, pinning me in a stare.
But I have questions. That you'll ask me,
Asher says, his tone steel.
And to be clear, she is not and will not become bait.
No, I say, pretty sure I sense a prior conversation in play. I won't be bait for a serial killer. I'm already living that. Though I might be perfect for the job, I'd kill him, and it wouldn't matter. I don't exist anymore, and then we're rid of a killer.
Holy fuck,
Asher murmurs.
I don't know if I love you, Blake says, or if you scare the fuck out of me.
By the way, Kara says, as if I haven't just suggested I'd kill the killer. If you notice the tendency for Asher to say fuck, you can blame Blake. They've worked together too much, and Blake doesn't seem to have another verb or noun for any sentence.
Who has Kyle's role tonight?
Asher asks, ignoring her, clearly not looking to lighten the mood. He glances at Kara.
I mean, who the fuck has Kyle's role tonight? Luke's following Juju, but he's out in a week for an airport project,
Blake says.
Royce is out of town in meetings, but he'll be on this team when he gets back. What about the surveillance truck?
Asher asks.
Jacob and Cooper, the new guy, are covering it for the rest of this job. Then let me go full circle to the start of this meeting.
Asher says,
let me, Luke, and Royce handle the rest of this case. You and Kara use Kate and Wilkins and take care of Alvarez. Take care of Myla and Kyle.
He presses his hands to the table and pins Blake in a stare.
Because if you don't, I'll call Kyle myself and tell him everything.
Asher doesn't wait for a reply. He straightens, takes my hand, and leads me out of the conference room and doesn't stop until we're on the street. The minute we're there, though, and the door shuts, he presses me into the corner, his hands on the surface above the door.
I need to know, and I need to know now. Is the beast a serial killer, Sierra?
Chapter 18. Sierra.
Answer me, Sierra.
Asher demands,
is your ex a serial killer?
Your cartel leader, Alvarez, I say. He's like him, only he's sought after and praised by the elite and everyone who would openly condemn Alvarez.
That doesn't answer my question. Is he a serial killer?
Killing isn't his motivation, I say. He kills to get ahead and get people out of his way, so no, technically he's not a serial killer. He's just a killer.
And you found out?
That and more, I say, which is why he wants me dead.
And yet you want to take a run at Juju.
I'm not running at Juju, but so far I've survived my monster. 5 girls have not survived theirs. I don't want there to be a 6th.
I don't want number 6 to be you.
It won't be, I say. You already kissed me and claimed me, remember?
We can't know that's enough to dissuade him,
he says.
He's shown interest in you when he won't even look Kara's way.
Yes, but... My brow furrows with a thought.
But?
If you're right, and he's shown interest in me, despite you obviously staking a claim, then you don't have his formula down.
I can see you thinking.
He says.
Where are you going with this?
You told me that refusing a paycheck made me look vulnerable, and that essentially makes me a target for any kind of predator. Maybe being single wasn't why Juju chose his victims. Maybe it was more about them being vulnerable or in trouble in some way.
In other words, Juju talked to someone at the bar that knows you are working for tips only.
Maybe. That's my thought. He pushes off the wall.
We need to move, and I need to make a phone call.
We start walking, and he digs his phone from his pocket.
The subway is the only way we can make sure no one knows where we came from.
What about after work? Aren't some of the subways closed?
Yes,
he says.
Which is why we walk to the ones that are open.
He punches in an auto dial in his phone.
Luke,
he says, and then listens a few beats before adding,
Sierra and I have a hunch that someone at the bar is aiding Juju in some way.
He glances at me.
Yes, Sierra knows about Juju. I'll explain later if Blake hasn't already.
He listens a minute, and they have a drawn-out conversation I can't keep up with, especially when we head down the subway stairs.
I'm heading into the tunnels,
Asher says.
We're going to cut out. We'll be there in 15 minutes.
He ends the connection and sticks his phone in his pocket and pulls out 2 subway cards, one he hands to me.
That is plenty of money on it. Keep it, but not in your purse.
We both swipe, and for now I stick the card in the pocket of my jeans. The minute we are on the other side, Asher's hand is on my back, a protectiveness and intimacy in the way he steps close. We head down the stairs just in time to catch our train, which is virtually empty. In unison, we both gravitate toward the end of the car, claiming the side-by-side seats there that allow us to keep our eyes on the entrances. What did Luke say about Juju? I ask.
He doesn't give a lot of opinions on the fly. He just gets the job done. He's putting a man on Terrence, the manager, since he's the one most likely connected in some way to Juju. And I'm not of Blake's caliber when it comes to hacking, but I can hack pretty damn well. Between Blake and I, we've already done a basic fingerprint for everyone at the bar. Tomorrow I'll dig in deeper, especially where the manager and the owner are concerned.
I think it has to be Terrence, I say. He's the one I've dealt with, and since I don't have a file, I'd say it has to be him. I really hate that I told him my real name. I can't believe I was that stupid.
Running gets old and exhausting,
he says,
and so does pretending to be someone you're not. You think your cover has become so real, even to yourself, that you can't misstep. But we're all human, and in your case you've had to change identity several times in 9 months.
Yes, I say. Sierra with blonde hair in Denver, Leslie with black hair in Kansas, Jenny with red hair in Texas. I used wigs, clinging to the idea of one day being me again. Until I got here, I had no time for a wig, and after Texas I knew it was time to embrace a new me.
Have you?
Not really. He reaches up and brushes hair from my eyes.
Believe it or not, I get it.
Because you've had to pretend to be someone else?
Yeah, well, that's part of it.
There's a flicker of something in his eyes I don't quite understand. and he cuts his gaze, his jaw set hard.
"Let's talk about Terrence and damage control," he says.